So welcome back to Redefining AI, the show that uncovers the nuances of artificial intelligence, exploring its impact and evolution across industries. Today, we are pivoting our focus and we're pivoting it to the healthcare sector. And this is something that we've explored together before in previous episodes. And today we're looking at placing more emphasis on healthcare technology. Now, to do this, I've been joined by Tim Darling. Now, Tim Darling, he is a co-founder and president of Laudio Insights. And I think that with over 20 years of experience in healthcare technology, we can probably hope and expect that Tim has a real passion for obviously using data and analytics as he claims to serve the challenges facing healthcare organizations. We know that prior to Laudio, Tim was on the leadership team of a healthcare education analytics company and spent 7 years as a consultant at McKinsey and Company. So it's really great to have you here on the show today, Tim, and we welcome you onto Redefining AI.
Thanks. Thank you, Lauren. Thanks for having me.
How are you today?
I'm wonderful. No, I'm really excited about talking with you on the topic. So yeah, thank you for including me.
No problem. It's always interesting, I think, at the start to get a little bit of an idea as to who are you and where does your real passion lie? I mean, obviously, we introduced you. You have an extensive experience, 20 years experience in healthcare technology, but where does your passion lie?
Yeah, well, personally, it has been for the last 10, 20 years at this intersection of analytics and strategy or analytics and decision making. And I've been lucky enough to be sort of found myself at the heart of that in a few different ways. And particularly with this latest venture, putting analytics and AI enabled analytics at the heart of decisions that are being made hour by hour, day by day in departments within hospitals and health systems is, I think, exactly where I'd hope to have been. And I'm, you know, it's been challenging, fun, and learned a few things from it.
Excellent. There's one thing that leads me to immediate curiosity. And I think the immediate curiosity also stems from the fact that there's been a lot of talk very recently about the empowerment that is offered by AI. And we're looking at it in various different directions. There's a lot of organizations that are obviously starting to understand the full capabilities that are on offer through AI assistance, but also AI automation. I mean, there's different streams of how you can follow that. And you spoke there about AI-driven analytics. Does this differ to non-AI-driven analytics? How would our audience understand that?
Well, it differs in what is possible, but generally, I don't think about it terribly differently. I think of AI as a tool in the toolkit, and there's many other tools in the toolkit. And really, for the work that I've been doing recently and our organization has been doing, it's important for us that we start with who we're serving, what they're trying to accomplish, how we can help them, how we can be actionable in their day-to-day life. And you have to understand that. It has to start with that. And then you go back and ask, what data can we put to use? What tools can we put to use? And sometimes machine learning or AI is the right tool. Sometimes it's a statistical regression. Sometimes it's simple logic and maybe some simple data transformations. I'm not personally particularly picky about it. So sometimes, you know, you hear and people talk about AI enabled this as if it's automatically the right and the best solution. I'm not sure that that's true. I think the best solution is to really understand what you're trying to accomplish and who you're helping. And if you understand that, then you'll find the right tool.
Mm-hmm. And it's a good place to start. Who we are serving. Now, who are you serving? I mean, we obviously know that you're heavily involved in the healthcare sector. And maybe you can start to share a little bit about your journey into the healthcare sector and also what inspired you to address the challenges that you're addressing at the moment. In the respect of who you are serving, I do believe that you're addressing a lot of the challenges that are faced by frontline leaders. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. That's really our organization's vision. And it started a number of years ago. My founder colleagues and I have been working with healthcare leaders of all levels for many years. And when we started this venture about 7 years ago, in particular, we saw that frontline leaders were perhaps a bit overlooked in the amount of impact that they can have on organizational outcomes and the challenges of their role. But, you know, we serve healthcare, we have executives of these organizations as well. So the executives have a real need, in my view, to shorten the gap between themselves and the frontline leaders. As I say, the frontline leaders are the heart and the vision of who we're serving. And on top of that, frontline employees, often some of them are nurses, technicians, lab assistants, and pharmacists, and so on. But the people who are doing the day-to-day work in these hospitals and health systems, urgent care clinics, and so on, you know, it was tough for them 7 years ago. We sort of saw the challenges of burnout and turnover amongst that group at that time. And it's only gotten worse. It's only gotten more complex, and it's only gotten more challenging. So we serve those three groups. But yeah, the heart of our vision, heart of our impact is with the frontline leader who brings it all together.
Mm. And with challenge and or support and the frontline leader, you mentioned a couple of challenges around burnout, turnover. What are you aiming to solve when you're highlighting and focus on those particular challenges?
Well, frontline leaders, in my view, are the heart of everything. In some organizations, they're called middle managers, but I think that's become a bit of a pejorative term. I mean, these are in health systems, they are the frontline managers. They often have 50, 60 direct reports, not a team of 50, 60 people, but directly reporting to them 50, 60, and some have 100, some have 120. So first, there's that challenge of incredible spans of control. You have, in many places, 24/7 operations in the hospital. You've got multiple shifts. And you have these frontline leaders that are really the highest leverage point to all of the organizational outcomes that are talked about all the time: employee retention, employee engagement, patient engagement, patient experience scores. And, you know, these leaders are responsible for those outcomes. They're also responsible for putting out all of the daily fires that pop up and serving their patients and supporting their team and managing all the communications and objectives from above while keeping their teams motivated and effective. So it's often said this is the hardest role in the hospital, and for all of those reasons.
If I'm understanding correctly, then Laudio then provides them with a platform per se that will alleviate a lot of the stress and tasks and overwhelming activities that are placed on their desks on a daily basis. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, to solve these challenges, we believe you need technology. Mm-hmm. You can either just change the structure, which is unlikely and really impractical in most situations. So technology, purpose-built technology, helps. Ours is one type of it. There are number of different approaches to that. But in our case, yeah, we saw that we could pull data in from different parts of the hospital, say the operational data, the human resources data, so on. We could run it through machine learning and statistical models, as we've talked about, and use that to identify the actions that each manager can take on any given day with any given team member that would have the highest probable impact on the outcomes that the organizations are solving for. Technology is great at that. AI is great at that. And it takes a tremendous burden off of the manager to have to try to do all those steps themselves.
Is there any, obviously there is a reliance, because if you're using data feeds that revolve around, you know, the operational data and human resources data, they must be from your end also the consideration of maybe the lack of accessibility to a 360-degree overview of everything that's happening from an operational and human resources perspective. I mean, how do you manage that challenge per se of the availability of data? Because as we've all always sort of heard, you know, it's the data that you have, it's the data that you can work with. Does that have any big impact on the actions that are then proposed for the managers?
Yes, well, absolutely. Well, on the one hand, the good news is there is a proliferation of data in the year 2024. Data and even analytics is generally not at any dearth of them. I think there's two challenges. One is finding data and applying analytics that solve particular challenges that make insights actionable. And that we talked about that at the beginning. I think if you have that as your starting point, then you can find the data that's available, find and put together different combinations of data to solve something. But to your point, yeah, there's great variation in data across organizations, across different facilities, even within the same department. You have some team members who have certain data available and some that don't for various reasons, and across different organizations, data of different quality. So we've spent many years understanding the variations in this data, and that is hard work. I think that's you know, I'm sure 99% of our analytics team's work, maybe many analytics teams' work, is understanding data, cleaning data. And it's the stuff that's not particularly attractive that people don't like to talk about. It's the hard work. It takes time. But yeah, I think that's, if you have the North Star, they have the North Star of who you're serving, what they're trying to accomplish. Generally, I don't think a dearth of data is a challenge. I think it's trying to find the data that works, filling in gaps, creative ways where you need to. And even if you don't have everything that you need, we're operating in a world where a bit of support, a bit of insight, a bit of nudges, recommendations from these AI-based tools that is helpful goes a long way, because, you know, it's, if not for these tools, the manager still has to, or the user still has to determine what to do. They have to act anyway, and they're going to have to work with the same data to try to figure those things out by themselves.
Exactly. Yeah, it's almost like an alleviation. And from what I've understood as well, I mean, automation is a key aspect of your platform. And I think that this would be a component of interest that we could delve into here.
Yeah.
What is the role of, like, for example, databases, user interfaces, and algorithms, particularly in the context you mentioned yourself, machine learning and statistical analysis with Laudio?
Yeah. Well, the way I think about it is that in terms of automation, for example, the work creates a sort of augmented reality for these leaders. And there's some tools, some AI tools and so on that create complete realities, and they're completely like self-driving cars, for example. They are entirely responsible for every decision being made, and you hand over the keys effectively to those algorithms in certain situations. That's not what we're talking about here. The real work of leadership is done by leaders. A lot of the leader work can't be automated. The work that they do, meaningful interactions, recognizing a team member, having a hallway conversation, discussing career goals, having a critical conversation, talking with a patient. Leadership itself cannot be automated. So, and we don't want to. We want leaders to lead. The way I think about it is that we're creating a form of augmented reality, if you will, for leaders, which allows us to give them a series of actionable insights, nudges, recommendations on top of the world that they're living in that saves them time, that points them in certain directions. And they can choose how to engage with that. At the end of the day, we can give them all the recommendations and proposals that we like. They can choose. They have to. They have to be the ones that choose what to do and how to do it. So, you know, I think that's, you know, as you and I had just talked about, that's, in order to get to that point, a lot of work has to happen behind the scenes. So that's a lot of the data cleaning. It's a lot of these applying of these algorithms, a lot of real deep understanding of the managers, the manager work, what they're trying to accomplish. But the impact of all of this is substantial. And, you know, as we've measured the impact with these statistical models, as well as with individual clients that we worked with, taking the right action at the right time can improve these outcomes by 30, 40, 50, 60% observable impact. And, you know, it just shows how important each little decision is. And leadership and culture is the amalgamation of every decision, all these little decisions, all these interactions, these hourly, daily actions, employee by employee, manager by manager, day by day, that add up to outcomes, that add up to culture, and little bits of support at each step add up to big changes.
It's exactly that as well that leaves me thinking on an individual level about how much of it does boil down to the collective culture that is created. And also when we're looking at the insertion of, for example, this concept of augmented reality, which is a really nice definition of how you're describing the whole scenario. And it is something that is quite fitting because it is an augmentation of the reality per se, and you are providing them with insights that are actionable, that have an impact on how they're working. One point of sort of that we would follow from what you've said is, you mentioned a lot of the work cannot be automated. Is that because of the sector though? Because obviously in the healthcare sector, there's a lot of moving parts, and there's a lot that pertains to maybe the sensitive nature of the data or the sentiment around the activity that happens on a daily basis, maybe the nature of the work. You also mentioned like we want leaders to lead in that respect. So does that mean that you do not see it being possible to have full automation? And it's not by inside. I mean, we could discuss, do we want full automation or do we not want full automation? But are you in the opinion then that you can't fully automate what's happening in that particular environment that you highlight, the one that you're serving at the moment?
Yeah, well, I think it's exactly the right types of questions to be asking. In the particular world that we are serving, I would say we are trying to give space for leaders to lead, and that aspects of leadership, many aspects of leadership, we don't want to automate, we want to support. But there's, you know, that question could be asked in and should be asked in every different area that these tools are applied. And many places, automation, I think, is possible. There are certainly behind the scenes, back office types of activities that can be automated and sort of removed from leaders' workflow. That's true. The way that I think about it is, well, the conversations that I've had with our leaders and our executives is that they have to be in the driver's seat. And if we give them support, recommendations, nudges, or anything that comes out of these AI statistical tools, the first question they ask is, you know, why? Why did this one come up? Why did this recommendation come up? Where did it come from? What? And of course, AI and machine learning models, great as they are black boxes and generally don't and are unable to explain how they work. And that's been one of the challenges we've been working through in this space. So, you know, for example, if we say to a manager that a team member needs more interactions than this particular month than their peers need, the manager will say, oh, great, thanks for the insight, but why? Why is that? And the models generally don't answer that. So somewhere the model is picking up on a set of inputs and they're making this determination. The determination may well and often be very accurate, but people can't just be told what to do. They have to be informed and brought along in the process. So the way we balance it is, yes, we run the most accurate models and predictive models that we can find to get to the outputs. We also have found that we need to run alongside other models to support communicating the rationale. Sometimes those could be statistical regression models, which are really great at sharing how they work. So, I mean, an AI model might really be great at saying that something needs attention, but a regression model can be added to that to share what some of the highest weighted coefficients are that give a sense of perhaps why the model is saying what they're doing. We see that same thing recently in ChatGPT, where if you remember when it was first launched, it would answer questions and then you would type in, well, share with me your sources. Why did you say that? And it was originally very poor at that. And they've improved it, but I believe they've improved it by adding to the AI models, not because the AI models naturally have gotten better at that they've built around it, because these models are generally really poor at sharing their rationale and how they think. So that's really one of the big challenges in this space. In the case of the augmented type of reality that we're talking about, how do you bring people along in the thinking and the thought process as partners in decision making? And to do that, you have to give them more than black box answers.
Yeah. And I think it is that sort of sensitive nature around being able to work with the predictive factors that are brought into calculation, like, you know, employee engagement and turnover, that's not always necessarily as straightforward as just pure risk classification. I mean, it's not just like, it is this or it is that. There's still the nuance of having that sort of external contextualized analytical analysis of whether the prediction is 100% accurate or it's not. If we're looking at, I think that we also spoke at one point about voice notes and interactions as well.
Yeah.
What sort of types of data are you using and how does that also contribute to maybe a more precise understanding of the scenario?
Yes. Well, everything we've talked about in today's discussion has been about some of the structured data, the data feeds from operational data, human resource data, and so on that pipe in. And, you know, variations exist in that data, but the data is structured and standard transformations can make the data manageable. But beyond that, we also collect the words that managers and their team members write and that they use. These, you can call them voice notes, but yeah, they can be collected by dictation. They could be text of emails or just notes that have been typed. And being very action-oriented, the only reason we measure or surface anything is if there's a specific action that we want to propose a manager taking. So this is a space that we're still learning how to make best use of this unstructured data, but that's the lens that we take to it. What patterns of speech lead to an action that has the greatest impact? For example, we at the moment provide executives with views of the different departments in their hospital and highlight departments that might need executive level intervention. So, for example, places where managers can't solve an underlying challenge. And those are often surfaced through these types of voice notes, the conversations, picking up, for example, that childcare support or the childcare hours aren't working. Those are specific topics that can't necessarily be quantified in advance. But if they appear in a number of conversations, you can pick up that theme. You can see that that theme is perhaps particularly relevant in a certain department and then raise that to executives. And the goal there is to reduce the gap between executives and what's happening with their frontline leaders and their frontline team members and allow them to act and intervene early.
Yeah, that's fascinating itself. It's almost like a large corpora analysis of being able to identify themes that are of importance to actually address in firefight.
Yeah.
Very, very, very fascinating. Would you like to share anything else with us today, Tim?
Wow. I've really enjoyed
the ball back in your court.
Well, we've covered a lot, haven't we?
Yeah, we have covered a lot, actually.
No, very good questions. Thank you for being thoughtful about them and guiding us through a couple of areas that were a lot of fun to discuss. I think we've covered everything that was on my mind. I suppose we could talk a little about some of the AI machine learning tools in particular, but in truth, those change so often and we are experimenting with so many and they're available really to, you know, to anybody to use. So I'm not sure there's as much use in that, but I certainly would encourage anybody to try them out. They're as accessible now as ever. And as I say, you have to spend the vast majority of your time accumulating data, cleaning data, and making it usable. But if you have data, if you have that, and you have something that you're trying to solve, an action that you're trying to provoke or recommend, if you have the user's voice and best interests in mind, then yeah, I would certainly encourage anybody who hasn't yet to try the tools out, apply the data to them, and just begin the process of learning. It's a tremendous amount of fun. And I think we're still at the beginning of our journey in many ways. But yeah, as I say, we've learned enough along the way to make this a very enjoyable journey.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see where we stand in 10 years as well and the speed of the developments. You've mentioned, obviously, and encouraged people to interact with different tools. And what I am very curious about personally is how the healthcare sector will develop over the next 10 years. I mean, there's a lot of criticism sometimes around healthcare technology, the implementation, the uptake, the speed of uptake. But I think that now that we're on some sort of hypercharged AI-driven journey collectively, then let's see. Maybe everything will look extremely different in 10 years.
There's absolutely no question. I think some of the themes we talked about today are particularly acute in healthcare, although I think they apply everywhere. And it really is in healthcare, you do not want, in my view, to remove the clinicians, the physicians, the nurses, the other team members, and the leaders from the decision-making process. I think we don't want much of that as a society. I think the health systems know that and are rightfully thoughtful and cautious. However, doing some of the things that we talked about, which is using these tools to pull underlying data, provoke recommendations that allow those team members to be better informed, to have some ideas, and then to make a decision based on them. That's sort of augmented as opposed to replacement in the workflow. There's really no downside to that. That is just creating time-saving mechanisms and safety nets in many cases to work that's already being done. So there's I think it'd be tremendous fun to be able to peer into the future, but whether it be 10 years or a handful of months,
Yeah, let's see. But very thoughtful thought, per se, to think about on this ending. Thank you very much, Tim, for being with us today on Redefining AI.
Thank you, Lauren. Thank you for having me. It's been tremendous fun.
And thank you to those that have followed the conversation and stayed with us. If you liked the episode, then share it. Thank you.